Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details. Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Pod. We mixed it up on this episode, did something a little bit different. We did a live AFL Fantasy Q&A over on our X account, formerly known as Twitter, at PodPodAFL. We were joined by no one, sadly. No one wanted to jump on and chat to their boy Dossie for a few questions live on air, but we did get through stacks of questions that were hit us up in the replies. The listener's a little bit bashful to get on live on air with Dossie, but we did get through a stack of topics, including the big ones, like your Nick Dacos, whether to start him or not, Kitty Coleman, is he still an option with that round two bye? Some of the comments coming out of Gold Coast from Dimmer, which were pretty juicy on the weekend, as well as some of the practice matches that happened. So there's a bit of a different setup. Obviously, the audio not as crisp along this one, but we hope you enjoy it nonetheless. See you on the other side. G'day everyone and welcome to Pod Live. It is your boy Dossie here talking all things AFL Fantasy this Monday night, 19th of February 2024, and we're going to be answering your questions live. We are at Pod AFL on X, formerly known as Twitter. So here with me, as always, we have five-time top 100 finisher, The Statesman. Welcome, Stato.
Hey buddy, how are you?
Going well. Pretty keen to get into some questions from the listeners. It's been a while since we've sort of dived into some Q&A style, so keen to get stuck in. We also have with us OG Pod Potter and basically a member of every single other podcast on the planet. He's done a special guest appearance everywhere this preseason. Louis, welcome, mate.
Nah, thanks, mate. Look, all I do is say yes. So good to be here, and it should be good to answer some of the listeners' questions. They always bring up something pretty interesting that even us haven't really considered. So looking forward to it.
And of course, we have our two-time top 10 finisher, John Harmy. Welcome on board, mate.
Thanks, Dossie boy. Glad to be here.
And I'm glad we got all the good ones tonight.
Yes, correct. No Holmesy on the show, but look, we'll be dropping another Holmes Files episode this Wednesday, and I've just had a listen through before doing the editing, as I always do, and that's a good one, so stay tuned for that one. But we will be doing a good old-fashioned Q&A for the preseason. This is raw and live on the stream, but we hope you enjoy a bit of a different format. But first, I think we better get into some hot topics before we dive in here, and just since our last podcast, I think we want to talk about the Sam Flanders Dimmer quote just real quick, because that was juicy. I'll try and bring it up if you haven't seen it, but Louis, just walk us through what you thought when you saw this quote.
Oh, I mean, I don't know if the social media team have gotten into Dimmer or what, but when you talk about quotes from a head coach or just in general from anybody to do with the football club, you just could not have crafted this thing any better. I will pat a little bit for you, Dossie, as you get the full quote.
I've got it, mate. I've got it. Thanks to the coaches battle tweeting this out. This was the quote. His capacity to run. He's a really good ball. He's a really good user of the ball. He's incredibly smart, and I think he will reach the potential this club invested in him. He's only going to get better.
for all those people who play Supercoach out there, get this kid in your side. We're going to feed him as much as we can. Stato, if you weren't starting Sam Flanders, despite the round three bye, you'd be pretty tempted now.
Yeah, absolutely. But obviously, the opening round will sort of determine whether it's worth the risk. It's just, God, I wish he was didn't have that early bye. That just sort of complicates the issue, right? But if he's going to be such a standout as we potentially think he might be, then it might be worth just shaving a little bit on one round early in the season and locking him away.
All right, there's one other hot topic we've got here, and I'm going to throw this to you, Harmy, because I know you're a massive fan of this bloke. He was in both of our teams throughout the entirety of last season, let us down most of the time. But look, there was some footage today of, I think it was today that it came out, of Jack McRae looking not great on his injury front, ended up running laps after starting off in the main group.
Yeah, no, I saw that, mate, and apparently pulled up lame and shook his head and was upset at the trainers. And that made me upset as well, actually, to be honest, Doss. And I'm a little bit sad about it. I'm not too sure where to turn yet, but maybe that's something we can thrash out today.
All right. We will be getting through, yeah, lots of questions, lots of listener questions to come. I just want to get any thoughts on the internal trial matches or the practice games over the weekend. I was at a wedding, lads, didn't get to see too much of it. So any insights would be fantastic if you've got any to share.
I got one for you, Dossie. One I loved, one of the media articles coming out of it, that Clayton Oliver starred in the last three quarters against the VFL players. Could you believe that?
Fantastic insights. Thanks for that, Harmy. But no, I know, Louis, in particular, you were keen on a few people, including one Jack Billings that I think you've been spruiking a little bit this preseason.
Yeah, I've been pretty keen on Jack Billings in general, but it was really quiet in terms of what he was doing at Melbourne over the last couple of weeks. And it was great to go and see him have his first sort of official hit out for the D's. And I do have to say, I was pretty impressed, actually. It was certainly an outside role, and the CBAs weren't there, which, you know, is a little bit unfortunate. But from what I saw within that game style, they were certainly looking for him as that kick inside 50 and that guy that can really start to create some options for Melbourne. And we know over probably the last couple of seasons that that's been something lacking for Melbourne, that delivery inside 50. And I think Jack Billings is really filling that role. And even though he didn't play wing NCBAs, as I mentioned, like some coaches were sort of hoping for, I'm actually taking it as a positive, because we know that Lockie Hunter is injured at the moment. He's expected to be back sort of round one, round two. So Windsor played that role. Concerns for him, perhaps, but I just thought that, okay, great. Jack Billings had a prominent role at half forward, 7 marks, 81 fantasy points. I'm not going to read too much into that sort of stuff in an unofficial trial game, but he just did the things that I like to see. And in terms of an eye test, I was pretty bullish. I think Jack Billings has a little bit of a point to prove, and we always love that extra little motivation for a player that's going to a new club that might show something. So he's one, as a forward-eligible player, that I think we're seriously going to have to keep an eye on this preseason in the next one game, really. So, pretty keen. He's been in my side for a while, and he'll probably stay there for now.
Louis, hey, speaking of forward-listed players, I was interested to see that Richmond midfield, based on Taranto not being there, Dusty not being there. So what did you make of Jack Graham's game? Did you get much out of that?
Not a lot, mate. Not a whole heap out of Jack Graham. He is one that wouldn't surprise me if he became relevant. I certainly need to see another game, just because, even in comparison to Melbourne, Richmond were just pretty much totally depleted through that midfield mix. And despite the win, I'm not even convinced that anything I saw is sort of legitimate on their side. So, but that being said, he is one that's shown that he can be an 80 to 85 guy, and I'm not sure what his price at, Harmy. You might have the price handy there, but yeah, it certainly wouldn't surprise me if he can put his hand up and become relevant. But for me, he'd probably still be a trade-in target, even if he does put up a nice score next week. You'd have to absolutely kill it.
I think there's a little bit of a challenge reading into sort of the Richmond data as well. So when you consider Nank, Dusty, Timmy T, and there's one other that escapes my mind, Liam Baker, who are all probably their first starting midfield, it's a little bit tough. So when you got four who are probably likely to be the first four in there on first bounce in opening round, it's a little bit tough. But it's Louis summed it up really well. It's the eye test model. And it's interesting the varying points of view that people have looking at these games. And Louis is someone I certainly trust, and saw Billings' link-up play, and I thought it was pretty good.
All right, guys, let's cut the crap and let's talk about Thompson Dow, the man, the myth, the goat. Tommy Dow, come through.
No, missing the four starting midfielders was my last point, Doss, so thanks for reminding.
Yeah, no, let's stop talking about the internals and the pracky matches and get to some questions, which is what this is all about. We put a tweet out earlier. I think you can also reply to this space if you've got any questions or request to have a chat. We'd love to have a chat to a few people live here and answer your questions. The first one, though, comes from Mark, who's put in his question. He wants to know, is it okay to pay up for the bench guys, especially to cover buys, the guys like Hoare, Curtin in defence, Sharp, Roberts in the midfield? So what do you think there, Stato? Are you willing to put a bit more money on the bench at the moment?
Yeah, happy to pay up on the bench as long as there's that potential of return, because what you want to do is make money. That's the key part, where you've got to try and balance points as well as making money. So there's no point having a 200K defender sitting on the bench pumping you out of 30 each week. You're better off paying an extra 80, 90K and ensuring that you're really raising that money. But you've got to pick wisely, of course. I think right now, with exception of the defenders and obviously when we're talking at R3, that there's actually a lot of rookies to pick from. So be smart with your research. The forward and midfielders have got quite a few. So ensure you get the right ones to make the most money. And it's probably less on how much you spend as long as it's, you know, below that 300K model. It doesn't matter so much how you spend. It's the actual cash you're going to make.
I'm going to throw this one to you, Louis, but I'll give you a question in between to come up with your answers because it's a bit of a tough one. This one comes from Peter. Who do you think is the biggest breakout contender in each line? Not a rookie, though. So I'll give you a question of buffer time there, Lou, to think of a player in each line, your biggest breakout contender in each line. And in the meantime, I'll throw to you, Harmy, your thoughts on Cam McKenzie. Sam currently has him at F4. Wants to know if Cam McKenzie's in your thinking at the moment.
Yeah, F4. That's probably about the right spot. And yes, he is in my thinking. I've been pretty keen on him the whole preseason because he had a lot of sub games last year. So I feel like his average is below where it should really be, as long as he's in the best 22 and getting a regular game. Wouldn't want to see him getting subbed out constantly. So I'm actually quite keen, even if he's on a wing. And if he gets CBA, he's even better. But he's really got to be entrenched in their starting lineup. So that's really what I'd be interested to watch over the next couple of weeks.
We briefly touched on Sam Flanders at the start as well. Sam also wants to know, is Flanders now a no-brainer even with the bye in round three?
No, he's not. I don't know. I guess I'm interested in Flanders, but they do have a bit of a tough run, and that early bye really do put me off. So, look, I'm just considering it. And I'll be honest with you, Dossie, he has actually not been in my team the entire preseason yet. So we'll see if that changes before round one there.
I've actually differed there a bit, Harmy, and I've been pretty vocal about not selecting Sam Flanders. And admittedly, unashamedly, I have certainly taken note of that Dimmer quote. I mean, I said it at the top of the show. You cannot ask for a better quote from a coach in terms of an AFL fantasy player. Just recently, it just feels like there's a little bit more confidence in those forward rookies. You know, for one, you know, Finn McRae put up a pretty good effort on the just the week previous. Harley Reid is in everybody's sides. Orazio Fantasia, as everybody knows, I'm pretty keen on. I think Lazaro put his hand up big time. Bailey Laurie on Sunday was pretty impressive as well. Sean Manor, who we're yet to see, is another one, mature age, that does has shown a bit at VFL level and can potentially take it up to AFL level. I'm starting to relent on that a little bit, just based on pretty much the small amount of depth that we've got in that forward line. So I'm not expecting Sam Flanders to be that, you know, even 100 plus guy, but I think he is probably going to be a top six, and is probably the one that I do have the most confidence in being a top six there. And McRae was previously that, but obviously did have that injury. So for those reasons, it's definitely come into vogue for me. I think potentially I can cover him with a 60, 65, and it does feel about right just because some of these rookies, as I've already said, look the goods, and the top end of that forward line isn't really, you know, blowing brains out or braining it, as the Hat Chat love to say. I can see DC in here at the moment. So that gap between the best and the worst is minimised. So perhaps there's an opportunity to pick a keeper and take that little hit in round three, but then, you know, truck along and have him for the rest of the year potentially. And I make no excuse. Dimmer's quote there has certainly sort of turned the tide for me.
There's a couple of big questions we've got to ask. And firstly, I'm wondering, where is the police? Is the police in Adelaide or Launceston? Obviously getting some sirens in the background. Seeing warnies listening, I'm tipping it must be Adelaide because they're all good citizens in Lonnie.
Not me, mate. No, not Adelaide, surprisingly.
There you go, Harmy.
Listen in.
Yeah, Harmy, be careful. Something's going down your street, mate. It's funny, we sort of look at the model of how many points we're going to miss in the one round. But maybe we forget who could replace the scoring. So when it's best 18, if you're bringing in a rookie that scores you a 50 and then think that score gets dropped off, it might only cost us 10 points from what was going to be our 18th rather than 19th scoring. So maybe there's a scenario with the best 18 model that we're overthinking a little bit the value premiums in the buy, and that's what Flanders actually is. So if he gives us scores of around the 110, that's what he's averaging, which is pretty much what he was doing the second half of last year, his price is going to go up, even though the premiums that score that level won't. So you're banking cash, you're banking points, and yes, you get a hit with one round, but it may not be as big as we think.
You're spot on, Stato. And look, you know, worst case scenario, maybe, well, let's say 50 points that you're losing out on that round, but, you know, that's what, 2 points a week for the rest of the year, you know. So it's not a lot in the long term if you can continue to improve your side. So I wouldn't be getting, you know, overzealous on in terms of all the rookies, certainly the early ones with the buy, but think we do overblow it, and I'll be the first to put my hand up that I've certainly been one that's probably overblown that impact and starting to come around a little bit, and we'll talk about that in a bit of the strategy leading up to round one, but certainly in the forward line where the options are just seriously thin, it might be one to really reconsider.
Yep. And maybe that's the point in looking what's the impact going to be. As long as it's one player per buy round, that the impact is going to be anywhere between 10 and 50 points. And if 50 points, the worst case scenario, as you said, may hurt a little bit more in the midfield, but with the forward line being so thin and relying on potential breakouts, lower end rookies, all that type of stuff, the impact in the forward line as it currently stands without DPP, the 50 points could be covered over those 23 rounds.
Amazing insights from Stato and Stato Jr., both with a monstrous segment there on Sammy Flanders. No, thank you very much for your insights, boys. And DC chiming in saying Flanders is going to brain it. Don't overthink it, guys. So I'm going to jump into some of the live questions before going back to a few of the other ones that we had earlier. Rowan Potter wants to know, hey, legends, how do you see Port's game style this season? The team points per game plummeted in 2023. Does it improve? And by how much? He's even got the numbers here. 14.45 per game, 18th last year. Harmy, do you see the pair improving their game style after being the worst fantasy scoring team last year?
Look, they may have a chance at winning a hit out, so I'm not sure if that improves them at all, but I'm not too sure, actually. I can't see too much changing, given that they had a really successful home and away season. I think it's going to be a similar brand of footy from them. But Lou's been down there. He may have a bit more insight than what I have with them.
Yeah, I've been pretty vocal in saying that the only way is up. And that's, you know, probably a really simple way of looking at it. But when I look at the coaching changes for Port Adelaide, they are there across the lines. And also contextually within our season, there's no doubt. And look, I think everybody knows that I'm very much anti-Hinkley, but I do think that the season was very much win-win-win mode. And that just doesn't work in terms of a seasonal, you know, AFL season. By the time we got to the finals, we were totally cooked. Our best players were pretty much on ice, and we just weren't able to compete. And I think that, you know, as impressive as what 13 wins in a row is, I think it is achievable by a lot of football clubs, but they just don't set out to do that because it's really not in their best interests. We often see towards the end of the season where the top eight sides are jostling, they do pick their battles and they do pick their rests in accordance to all that. So for me, I think that Port Adelaide will probably play a little bit more of a keepings off and play it safe this season. And if that can get them middle of the road, then, you know, we're talking 100, 150 fantasy points to share amongst the teams. So I'm pretty bullish that they will improve. I think to a point, it's probably the outlier last season, just pretty much shooting towards the bottom while previously being towards the top. So for me, I'm optimistic, and I think they can improve again and use a little bit more of their weapons. You know, Ollie Wines has been spoken about too, so I think there's points to be had there. Where they get distributed is anybody's guess, but I really don't see Port Adelaide being the lowest scoring fantasy side again in 2024. And I think I mentioned it on the Ball Boys that, you know, when the sea rises, so do all the boats. So I'm hoping that that's going to be the case for Port Adelaide this year.
Are you on a bit of a deal here, mate, getting a little bit of royalties by dropping as many pods that you've been on as possible?
Yes, I am, mate. The cost of living at the moment is seriously intense. So anybody who wants to send me a message and flick some money my way, I'm an absolute Marty whore for it.
You've also also just said you've sold your car because you're that convinced you got the Lux as well. That's Dossieri's of 2023 there from you, Lou. But look, we've also got a few questions relating to Kitty Coleman now coming through. Sam has done it on the live chat, but there's also been a few other people asking in whether it's worth starting Kitty Coleman. We know that he's been a topic in the preseason already, but Stato, what do you reckon, despite the round two bye, what are you going to need out of him to be keen to go there? I think it's also due to the lack of those defensive rookies that we're seeing, you know, the real cheap kind of defensive rookies and no confidence in those players.
I've got less confidence that Kitty Coleman is a great value pick. We know he can go big in quarters, in halves and in some games. We accept that. But he hasn't shown what Flanders has shown. So with the round two bye, I'd rather take my time and have a good view. Listening to Holmesy and Selby over the years, as much as they like taking a punt, every now and again on one of those mid prices, they're hoping to break out. If they're a little bit unsure, they like to look and see. So pouncing round two, round three sometimes is the best option. And so certainly Selby's winning year in 2007, that's the action he took. So with someone with a bye that I don't know if they've got the ceiling or be a standout potential number one like Flanders, I'll treat it a little bit differently. Have a bit of a look-see, make sure both the role and the scoring opportunities are there. I haven't looked at their fixture model to see whether on Carl's scale of hardness that they've got the type of run that you want to jump with as well. So he's one for me to watch.
All right. I've got a question for you, Harmy, and I'm interested in the answer. I haven't seen too many people bring this up as yet this preseason. With all the talk about value, trying to get, you know, players that obviously can make that money, even if they are in the premium category, Brisbane Bloods Fantasy wants to know, do we need captain options? And if so, how many and at what price point are you willing to pay up for that captain option?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was always of the opinion that you needed two good captain options. But I guess, you know, now we can loop and we'll probably have a range of options over the first six rounds about, you know, a red dot to chuck a loop on. I'm not sure how essential it's going to be compared to other seasons. So for me, I'll just have a quick look, mate. I've only got one player over 900,000 who I would see as being my captain early. So, yeah, that's where I'm standing at the moment. But it depends how much confidence you've got in, say, a Max Gawn as well. I mean, him or like your Jack Steele, Zach Butters, if you see those sorts of players as being captaincy options, then you'll probably end up with a handful, won't you? But yeah, that's where I stand. I like to have at least one, so I've got one in that price bracket at the minute.
I got to say, I think when we made our team the other day on the podcast, obviously you guys took a bit of liberty when I disconnected there and threw a few random names in the mix, but I got to say that's one of the reasons why, even though it's probably a looser pick and not many people would go there, there is some, you know, I don't know, safety in picking someone like a Rowan Marshall who's over the $1 million, but the safety in the role, the safety in the scores, I don't know, if you're going to go a bit different, I'd be wanting to pick a role that is just so locked in like your ruck spot to get those sort of ceiling scores. But yeah, it's interesting, and whether you're willing enough to pay up for captaincy options is going to be an interesting one going forward.
There is a difference, Doss, between getting disconnected and being kicked off.
Yes, that is true. Louis, I want to go back to that question. We've given you about, you know, 20 minutes buffer. So have you got a breakout contender in each line for us?
Yes, I do, mate. So do you want, I'll start from the forward line. And this one I've been banging on about for a while now. James Jordan is probably my breakout contender in the forward line. I'm not sure where that's going to lie. Definitely need to get a look at him, but just based off of all the sub games that he's endured really throughout his whole career to this point, I think he is more of a 70 guy than the 50 that he's priced at. And with a bit of natural development, potentially, and just a little bit more confidence in his role and a little bit more confidence from the coaches. They probably seeked him out, James Jordan, to come over and join Sydney and gave him some reassurances. So I'm sort of seeing at least 20 points upside there in the forward line, which is something which is a line we're scratching around for options. Is James Jordan, for any of you guys, also an option in your forward line?
Yeah, Louis, I've sort of been interested in him the whole time. But it's sort of a funny one. Like, the Swans seem to be a club that you don't get much out of. You sort of seem to hear a lot about, you know, those middle of Melbourne teams, but and a bit out of WA, actually, which has been nice because there's some interesting options there. But, yeah, with the Swans, you wouldn't know who's in their midfield mix at the moment. You don't even know if he's best 22. Like, there's good reasons for him going up there, being pursued. You know, Stephen's gone, so, you know, there's arguably a spot there for him. But I guess until we see it, I'm a little bit uncertain.
And for myself, I think Swans, outside of winning finals, are becoming a little bit like the new Essendon, where there's so many mouths to feed. So I want to see what happens in opening round. Sorry, Warney was there, so I just thought it was an opportunity.
No, totally agree with that, guys. I do like the fact that Matt Roberts has been mentioned as being one of those guys that's in the best 22. So when I'm looking towards guys that may or may not be the sub, if there's a couple of guys that I can identify as somebody that may go before them, that's always happy days for me. But moving on to the ruck line, I think the obvious one, and look, I won't throw to any of you guys for this one because we've probably discussed it a little bit, and I'm sure we will continue to do so. But Tristan Cherry should be the number one ruck at North Melbourne. Was somebody that people were keen on, coaches were keen on last season. I'm hoping he can break out. He's priced at what, in the 65 sort of region. I think that he can break out to be sort of 85, 90, potentially even 95, which if he is, that's fantastic. I can jump up to the next best ruck whenever I see fit. And the reason I really like him too is because even though we go, oh, Gawn Grundy, Gawn Grundy, there's a potential sort of scenario where neither of those are set and forget. You know, we've got Rowan Marshall, who put his hand up in lights last year and went at the 115+. And we've got Tim English, of course, which went at the 119 or whatever it was. So even though I'm not suggesting that if some of these guys go 110 that you would trade them, they're also at the same time not necessarily top two rucks either. So that's why I sort of lean to Tristan Cherry. He may be able to be that guy that does bridge that gap between the next best comp. Do you guys sort of agree with that logic, or do you think there's a little bit more to it?
No, I don't mind it, Lou. Yeah, I've been thinking, you know, all of these things that you have said, I have thought as well. So that ruck line is going to be interesting. I don't. There's a lot of people saying it's Gawn Grundy, but I've said all along I'm still open to the idea of having a Marshall or an English, and Cherry definitely in the mix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And I'm going Gawn Grundy, but because of the buys, I'm open to switch if one or both are not working out.
Does it worry you at all, Stato, that for that buy, obviously with the rucks, that potentially you've got no cover? And I'll just ask that because the narrative all season for all these early buy plays has been that, okay, well, if I select them, I'm going to have to take this guy off the bench who may score a 50, a 60, best case scenario, a 70 potentially, but in the rucks, it really is quite isolated. And if we're not going to get a Toby Conway or a Jordan Sweet for those coaches looking to pay up for him, it literally is just a straight donut. You're not copping anything. It is best 18, so you can hide a little bit, but just having that one less can still affect your bottom end of that best 18.
Well, more this year, more than any other for quite some time, the rule effing one becomes so important, especially through those four early buy rounds. But yes, I'm certainly praying that we have an R3 option. I think the most likely at the moment is Conway, to be honest. So the reports, and they are very thin on the ground, of course, but the reports is Conway is competing well in the ruck contest, but winning around the ground. So I'm hopeful it comes off, but yeah, it is certainly a threat, mate. So it's certainly something I'm keeping an eye on.
Stato, just quickly, mate, rule effing one for the new listeners. We actually do like new listeners here at the Pod, unlike the Draft Doctors.
Yeah, can't stand them. It's 30 green dots, and of course, that's all about, and we know that's not realistic, right? That 30 green dots disappears about round three or four when you've had LDU in your squad and many others that are going to get injured. Sorry, still hurting from that. Two donuts. Basically it is that if you've got 30 playing and you've based your squad on having value players or undervalued premiums, that you're generating income. So it's all about making as much money as you possibly can to complete your squad as quick as you can. As soon as you got red dots sitting there for long periods of time, they're not making you money. Therefore, you can't use them for the one up, one downs, and it takes longer to complete your squad.
All right, Lou, let's get to your last couple of picks here for breakout contenders and we'll get on to the next questions.
Yeah, mate, moving on to the midfield, and I feel like such a fraud for this. I'm going to be picking Nick Martin, and admittedly was somebody that you were keen on the other week when you asked Amon or Martin, Dossie. So I'm thinking you might be right there. And before I go into Nick Martin, the reason I've just called a little bit on Carl Amon is the injuries to GF and Dylan Moore. I think Amon was definitely earmarked for that halfback role, and he's an absolute gun on the wing as well, and a meters gained beast. And I'm just a little bit worried that if Hawthorn do struggle to move that football from sort of the mid area of the ground towards their forward 50, that Carl Amon, he really is a shoo-in to be able to do that. He's an absolute lethal boot, and I think he's certainly capable. So while I think he probably will start at halfback, the potential that he does go to a wing and doesn't in turn gain DPP would be, to be honest with you, a little bit of a disaster of a pick through the midfield. So with Nick Martin, they've been super consistent all preseason that he's gone back to halfback. All the match reports, he's there, he's the man, everything is going through Nick Martin. And being a team that were the most conducive for fantasy points last season for defenders, and keeping in mind that the top averaging defender was only in 85 anyway, there's just a large distribution of points back there. And I think Nick Martin is built a little bit different and can really capitalise on that. Kick-ins have been already noted, and for someone who was moved off the wing due to their look, a bit harsh with their ineptitude to defend, I think the halfback role really is suited to him. And if he can go at 94, courtesy of Jaden Papowski's stats on his website, which I'm sure if he's not tweeted out, will tweet out soon, the 94 is the worthwhile average for him as a defender. So taking a little bit of liberty, hoping that he does pick up that defensive status, I think he will. But for that reason, him being a keeper at priced at, what, 86, he's probably the one that I think can break out to be that 100-plus guy, which would be not only a great pick as a midfielder, but a total smash play as a defender.
Huge. Harmy, you're our Essendon man. Just your quick thoughts on Nick Martin.
I'm not as keen as some others. at the moment. I think I've seen the training reports, awesome, and he can certainly rack up on his day and he can get loose and get a mark in that back line for sure. But we got quite a lot of defenders. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a bit of competition for the role. And he was also really good on the wing. I think that that's actually been put in place to try and assist like Durham, Dersma, Sardis. So, yeah, look, I'll keep an eye on it, but I'm not as sold as Louis is, but that's okay.
Harmy, that's just it, though. Like, they do need to get those minutes into those guys through the midfield. And I'm just not sure, and you're the Essendon man, mate, so I'm not going to push back too hard on this, but I'm not sure who they see as the main ball user back there. I know a couple of weeks you said Laverde probably isn't the man anymore. He was playing key defence. Does Ridley start to lock down a little bit more? Redmond can sort of do both things. Obviously, you got Ben McKay there. I just wonder, with Andy McGrath as well, probably not being that guy, I just wonder if more of that pill does flood through a Nick Martin who, you know, up to this point, in terms of reports, is just getting glowing ones.
Yeah, look, I don't want to get too bogged down on this one, mate, but I think that Redmond's the one that's got that penetrating kick coming out of our back line, and McGrath at times as well. So, yeah, that's what I mean when I say the Bombers have got options.
All right, before we get to your forward pick, Lou, we'll just swing a few questions through the lads as well. Just one for you, Harmy, from John. Do outside players like Brayshaw score better early on in the season when the weather is better before it comes wet weather and contested footy beasts like Jack Steele flourish?
Anecdotally, that's what people say, but I'm not sure. I think in the first couple of rounds, we usually see a few sort of funny results anyway, as people are finding their feet and adjusting to different game styles and that sort of thing. So I don't know if you could just say all outside players are going to go hot early. I don't think that's probably a fair comment.
Josh Lord wants to know, Stato, I know you were keen on the podcast, but your thoughts on Geordie Clark from Freo, averaged 88 while Young was in the midfield last year?
Yeah, I like the pick. I really do. And has got that good buy system. He's got a few things going for him with regards to the player positioning. Both Chapman and Young sort of out of that mix. It's him and Ryan that I think will get the major benefit. So I think there's some value. I don't know how high the ceiling is. What's he priced at, Dossie? It's mid-80s.
77, I think.
Oh, wow. So I think there's a good 10 to 15 up for grabs there. So, yeah, I think he's a good pick.
Love it, mate. And anyone listening live, feel free to request to speak. We will answer your questions live on air as well, but happy to keep getting through these questions that you've commented in. Make sure you do comment if you've got a question. This one from Jaden Greenfield. Thoughts on Isaac Rankin as an Adelaide man? Did see on the news the other day playing heavy midfield time, priced at 74 with only the 2% centre bounces last year. Let's go to Stato again, mate. What do you reckon on a bit of a Isaac Rankin pod? With the knowledge, of course, Rory Led was not in that in that match sim playing midfield. But a friend of mine actually the other day noted to me, despite Rankin not playing in the midfield, playing in that high half forward role last year. Now, I didn't fact check this, so hopefully it was spot on. But was one of the leading, if not the leading, kilometres run for the Crows. So certainly got that fitness, which maybe in the early days with his injuries kind of in the early career, you wouldn't have thought that he'd be leading the Crows in the kilometres.
Yeah, look, it's an interesting one, and I'm not huge on this. I am in draft, but when you talk, there's Pedler, there's Rochelle, and there's Rankin that are all in that mix to get a little bit of burst time through the midfield. They'll probably share a little bit of that high half forward as well. But Rankin and Rochelle, I think they want predominantly more closer to goals because of the impact they can have on the scoreboard. So, therefore, I think you're going to have a lot of ups and down and it'll disturb the cash generation. I really like the player, but I don't know if it's the right go to get him in fantasy.
All right, one more question, then we get to Lou's forward breakout. This one's for you, Harmy. Thoughts on Sexton bit of a word out of the Suns that he's in that half back role in a bit of a role change.
Yeah, and heard that a few times now. Big sexy in the forward line, 382,000. I'm pretty interested to see that. I guess we have spoken before about there being some opportunity in that back line, and you know, like Lockie Weller's not there. Connor Buderick should have a bit of a role, but be interesting to see. My only question is, he's a 30-year-old that they're asking for a role change. So, geez, everything would just have to fall into place really well for that to pay off. But I'm definitely interested. I mean, he's got a lot of skill and he seems fit enough. He just sort of seemed to fall out of favour with that forward line. So, yeah, if he's coming off that half-back flank, accumulating a few possessions, I'm interested at his price point.
Sorry to just butt in there, Dossie, but yeah, I think there's plenty of blokes out there that love a sexy whore sort of setup, so that might be one to go.
Oh, nice one, Lou. Yeah, don't get too excited there, DC, as well, when we're mentoring Butterick, because, yeah, he'd be quite keen on that combination as well. So maybe the sexy whore Butterick. All right, so over to you, Lou. Let's hear your forward pick for your breakout, because I think a lot of us would love to hear this, because everyone's needing a bit of a bargain up forward and a breakout could do the job for us.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, Dossie, because I did start with James Jordan, who, of course, is a forward.
All right, yep. What are we up to? Have you finished your breakouts then?
No, I'm up to defenders, mate.
All right, sorry, mate.
And Stato did answer the question beautifully with Jordan Clark. He is the guy that I'm putting my chips on. He's got a defined role with Hayden Young moving into that midfield. Obviously, Chapman did have that injury as well, and I just think that this guy is just primed to go bang at this point. The fitness is up there, which we love to see from a halfback point of view. The game style is there with Fremantle, who love to kick mark all day, and it's just the ceiling that we have seen previously, and certainly in that preseason game a couple of years ago, which, yes, may put a bit of a bad taste in some coaches' mouths, but we don't see, even in preseason games, too many players of elite attributes to sort of go at that 160-plus mark. So for me, I think Jordan Clark, with a bit of extra responsibility, elite fitness and a bit of a leadership role back there, is probably one of the more mature players at Fremantle in that defensive six. I think he will be the guy that the football flows through, priced at 76. I can see 15 points upside there, and I also see him, if he's not a keeper, as being that sort of stepping stone to a Nick Dacos, which is certainly relevant this year. And for coaches not starting him, he could be your ticket to success there.
Very nice pick. Loving my Geordie Clark as well. Stato, just quickly, I want your thoughts on Butterick and Sexton. I don't know if we grabbed him there, just because Robert, Mr. the reigning number 24 overall by the looks, wants to know your thoughts, considering you were one that jumped on Darcy McPherson last year for his little nice run to start the year.
Yeah, but the role was really good last year, but we've got to remember that was under Stuart Dew. But we've also got the Dimmer model that really elevated Short to become a premium defender. So Dimmer's given us a few little tips. So Buderick was one he did call out as the Jordan Short type. And he's also given us a good little interesting thought on Flanders, which is brilliant and great to hear from the coaches. Kenny and Dimmer doing the right thing by us, Given us a clear picture of what they're doing, which is promising. Sexy, look, I just want to see it. We've talked about Sexy a little bit on the Draft Doctors this week, and my opinion was that he's got all the attributes and someone with high-level talent that the Gold Coast have never got the best out of. So he's got pace, he's got great skills, he's got a bit of X factor, and has been, you know, sort of sitting there in the forward line, probably wasting his talent a little bit for some years when it comes to a fantasy perspective. So I would love to see it. We get the opening round to have a bit of a look. And if he pops out a good score, then he should be of interest, so we can make a bit of money out of him for the first two rounds back, you know, obviously three price changes effectively because you get the opening round score. So he's one I'm looking at because I think he's only 382 off the top of my head. So that's a damn good price if you're going to have a 70 or an 80 sitting next to his name.
This is another interesting question coming from Michael Neeson. This one's for you, Harmy. Common theory is the Swans have many mouths to feed, and many also believe that Adams and Parker will share roles. But Parker only averaged 90, mostly as a mid. So why are many picking Adams if a 90 maximum only means a 13-point upswing and he has that early buy?
Because he's going to make 13 points and he's in the forward line. Where we're starved of options. So there's probably a couple of good reasons. I mean, I think that he'll be 90, somewhere between 90 and 100. That's my personal opinion. I have no real facts to back that up, but that's where I see it going. I'll just give you a couple of names, actually, Dossie, while we're talking about it. I reckon Parker, Warner, Adams, with a bit of Rowbottom and Gordon Papley sparingly. So, yeah, that's what I'm tipping as their midfield, which means he'll get a high rotation. He'll be sort of around that 50% mark, I reckon, and that's probably enough for him to accumulate a good fantasy score.
I think the key thing, Dossie, to note here, and we're all guessing until we see it right, so we've got to give the opportunity to have a look, and we will at opening round and against some good opposition, which is actually even better. But the key thing for me and the reason why I'm excited, we know Adam's scoring power when he's got the right role, but the key thing that he's got is his strength is their weakness. So I can't imagine at this stage, but maybe proven wrong because it's only theories at this stage, that why would you split 50-50 and only improve your weakness by 50%? I'd go full hog if I was them.
I tend to agree with that too, Stato. I think he will be pretty prominent in those midfield, in that midfield role. Where he ends up in terms of scoring is anyone's guess. It's certainly not encouraging that you know, some of their best midfielders outside of Goulden are really just edging that 90 mark. And look, I do think that Adams can go at that 90, which is about, you know, 13 to 14 points upside. Where I do see some concern and something I probably haven't seen or heard mentioned much, and maybe I haven't been listening enough, but Brody Grundy is coming into that midfield, and he's someone that all of us are sort of going, okay, he's 100 to 105 guy, you know, he's going to have that automatic upside, he's an absolute gun. And when I look at the ruckman last year, which was Tom Hickey, and I don't have the numbers what he averaged last year, but it wouldn't have been, you know, much more than 80, if that. I wonder where that those points sort of come from. Yeah, there may be more stoppages and all that, but everybody says that Brody Grundy does play as that extra midfielder. So that does worry me a little bit. On the flip side, though, I can see there being some cohesion within that sort of partnership, obviously both coming from Collingwood as well. So I'm a little bit more hesitant on a Taylor Adams, but that being said, at the 691K price mark, I think you've got probably a plethora of options to drop down. You know, Alex Neil-Bullen, which was someone you were keen on, Stato, just the other day, is there at 650. Connor McDonald, been spoken about the whole preseason at 638K. James Harms, 637K. And, you know, Liam Baker, we've mentioned a couple of times too. So he does provide that parachute that if he doesn't fire in round zero, that we can drop down and go, oh, sweet, I've got that 60K pocket money to go and spend elsewhere.
And the other question, obviously, is his body, but hopefully he does the right thing. If he does get injured, make it the 25-minute mark of round four and we're all sweet. The
thing about Adams, though, I mean, I spoke with Bales about this. He hasn't scored below what he's priced at in the last 10 years, so I can't see him going backwards. Like, he's gone there for an opportunity and, in my opinion, a promise of an inside role. I just think he's going to have a good year.
Saving your best content for the other podcast as usual there, Harmy. Thanks, mate, for that. We'll get on to another question and go back to the nibbler for Stato. Alex Neil-Bullen, another question coming in about him. So played a centre bounce role on the weekend. We know that there's likely a bit of a delayed start to the preseason, or sorry, to the season proper for Clayton Oliver, potentially, or maybe less of a midfield role while he gets his fitness up. Alex Neil-Bullen, probably not one that we would have thought. We kept looking at the Sparrows, at the potential for Billings to go in there, but maybe an Alex Neil-Bullen, bit of a nibbler action up forward with a centre bounce role. Thoughts, Stato?
Yeah, he's got great scoring power. And look, we've seen a 140 from him before. So right role, right opportunity. He could be a great score for us. So I'm going to have a keen eye on round zero. The data for those four quarters, admittedly without Oliver, but we actually know that their forward line, sorry, their midfield's a bit thin. So they've got a few issues. So they'll be looking for other people to put a bit of work rate in, and positive signs with his percentage, which was just below 70 for those four quarters, higher than Petrarca. And what a Petrarca do nice and early, show how good he is in front of goal. So that's good signs. So he's a bit of an ace in the pack if it eventuates and he does get good midfield time.
I think the one in our midfield, though, is Viney at the minute that we should be sort of having a bit of a look at.
Big time.
Finished the season well last year. He's a pure inside mid. He's not going to be chopping out in that forward line for, like, he'll have the highest percentage of CBAs, I would expect. So, yeah, he's one to have a look at.
A juicy point of difference, if you will, there, Harmy. Love that. And Stato as well. So, yeah, a few to keep an eye on for Melbourne. Still interested to see what happens with that whole dynamic. Just looking through some questions. Have we got through enough here? Sorry, boys, padding a bit. Dacos, we want our thoughts on Dacos. So, I mean, it's been a hot topic, Dacos, to the season. I think most of us think he is going to be the D1, but I think a majority of the pod squad here aren't keen on starting Dacos. Is everyone on that same boat, Stato?
Yeah, I've never been a fan, and for as long as I can remember playing this game where you pay for the highest priced player in the line. Just never been for it. I've always looked for the value. And obviously he's got a couple other things that have a little bit of a concern. So he plays Sydney Swans round one, his toughest opponent. He's got Hawthorn with a potential tag, and we've got to be careful. Last year, sort of Louis sort of planned not to have him because of a tag. So, and as we found out, that was the incorrect call. And then you've got the bye. So there's sort of three things that you got that sort of question mark, as well as being at the max price. Now, I'm not saying he doesn't improve, because we know this one is a special player, but he's the type that I'm willing to see what happens and make him a target after his bye.
Same thoughts for you, Lou?
Yeah, he is super interesting. And Stato did mention that we were, a large group of coaches last season weren't interested in starting him due to that tag threat. And I sort of think, you know, how many times as fantasy coaches do we sit back and go, oh, I was a year early on that one? And I'm not saying that's necessarily going to be the case, but Nick Dacos, make no doubt about it, certainly put his name up in lights. He is the guy to propel Collingwood forward, and he is the guy that really did get them to a grand final in the end and eventually won it. And quite often when something like that happens, opposition coaches take note. He's their best player, and we do talk about specific tag scenarios like a Finn, a Windy, potentially a Drew, but outside of that, it's not only that. It's, you know, there are run with roles that happen within games and attention that is applied. And I'm not doubting Nick Dacos for a second. I think at 108, 109 price point, he probably is still a couple of points value, but that potential compounded by his early buy in round five is just something where, at the end of the day, I would rather go and pick somebody who I'm confident can go 109 and not have that buy and still be a keeper. So that is where I lean. I understand that he is far and away the best defender that we've got to pick from. I understand that, yes, okay, potentially we can move him into our mids so that we don't have such a difference between what our first selected emergency is and our defender emergencies. But I just think you're introducing so many different variables here. Whereas on the other end of the spectrum, I sort of go, well, you know, maybe I can pick an Andrew Brayshaw and he can go 109 times six, as opposed to, you know, maybe 109 times five. So that's where I end up landing. I think he's going to be somebody that we target. I think he's somebody that absolutely every single coach with a starting squad this year should be making a plan right now. Okay, how do I get Nick Daicos? I mentioned earlier that, look, I'm planning on hopefully Jordan Clark being that guy, but you look towards the forward line, everybody's starting 3-4, you know, some even 5 mid prices up forward. Is that the way to go? There's definitely a FOMO aspect about not starting Nick Daicos, which is fine. But I think that maybe we need to move our viewpoints towards, okay, well, I'm not going to start Nick Daicos. I'm going to start this guy instead who I think can maybe match him. But I need to have a plan in place. And it doesn't always go right. But I've got a plan in place to go, okay, sweet, I'm going to get Nick Daicos off that round five buy or off that round six buy post Port Adelaide, and I'm going to do it via this. And even if that plan doesn't come to fruition this week, the fact that you've got that in place can often set you up a whole lot better than some of the players that you're sort of thinking about. So, yeah, that's where I sit with Nick Daicos.
All right, I think everything has been said for Nick Daicos, Harmy, but are you yes or no starting?
No, I've got still got Jack Bowes as my D1 at this stage, mate.
Jack Bowes, mate, get the pronunciation right, please. But yes, Jack Bowes, what a gun. Andrew wants to know, we'll just get a few more questions and then we'll wrap up. We've been just about gone for an hour here. So Andrew wants to know, is Martin M4? Crouch M5 and Wines M6. So Nick Martin M4, Matt Crouch M5 and Ollie Wines M6. Too much preseason mid-price madness, Stato?
No, they're potential value. I'm less convinced with Martin, but let's see what it happens. And the only reason I am, he's the right quality player, all that type of stuff, and I think he can do really well in the role. There's just a lot of players. What's happening with Redmond, Ridley, McGrath? That's quite a few to sort of feed the footy. But I understand that I could be proven well wrong here. So I see the potential upside. The other two, want to see Crouch as part of the 22, but he's good value. Wines is definitely good value. So it's not crazy. In fact, it's the way we should be playing, right? Potential premiums in their lines. I don't think outside potentially Martin, if he does get defender status, that they're, you know, top eight players, Crouch and Wines, but they're good value. They're going to help make money as well as give you good points on field.
Now, Harmy, quick one for you, mate. From Marco, has Jack Steele shrugged off his niggles and can he go back to being a 100-plus averaging guy? We haven't seen him yet, but what are your thoughts ahead of the potential games coming up?
Of course he can. I mean, who's playing in the midfield for the Saints? Jack Steele and...
Batty Dow.
At the start of the season, he's not. I'm not sure if Crouch is in full training yet. Don't know about that. Where's my list, actually? But, look, I think that last year he had, what, he had the shoulder injury and a knee injury. It seemed like he was always battling something. I think he had post-season surgery as well, didn't he? So, geez, he was pretty banged up. I mean, I think that he's, reportedly fit in the preseason. I just think that it's all him. Why wouldn't they continue to invest in him? He's not even 30. So, yeah, I mean, Steele, clear number one mid in my opinion. Crouch will come in there. Windhager will play a defensive role, most likely. Clark is injured. Sinclair may need to come in there because outside of that, it's Dow who's injured, Seb Ross. So, I mean, Filippo a little bit possibly, but I'm sort of struggling to pick what's happening with that Saints midfield at the middle at the moment other than Steele. It's got to be him that they centre everything around. So we'll see. Marshall to Steele has a pretty nice ring to it. I think it'll happen a fair bit this season.
Also, just shout out to former Saint superstar Jackie Bytel getting signed by the Pies. So my boy, available
hashtag
to
on brand.
Available to select under 300,000. The Premiers know a good pick when they see one there. So Jackie Bytel back on an AFL list. Look, I think we'll just get to one more here for you, Louie. The fans want to know, is Simon Goodwin holding Jake Bowie back?
Did you ask this off of the burner account, Dossie, or
this is a legit question, mate?
Look, no, I don't think that they're holding Jake Bowie back. I think they have better users, and we saw that probably on the weekend with a guy that was touted for more mid time, and Trent Rivers just used the ball beautifully off half back. I think Stephen May is underrated in terms of his disposal, and that's a reason why he does take a lot of the kick-ins. Another that didn't play on the weekend was Brayshaw. I just think that Bowie's a bit of a role player. He can use the ball well, but he can look down on some of those smalls quite well too. So for me, he's just caught in between a couple of different roles, and for that reason, I just don't see him as being relevant, mate.
No worries, mate. Well, thanks everyone for listening to a bit of a change up. Pod Live, of course, we are at Pod AFL here on X. You can follow us on Spotify, on YouTube, wherever you're listening to your podcast as well. We'll be putting this up on the podcast feed so you can listen back to the whole thing, or of course, just listen to it back on the Spaces feed. Also, go join the Pod Challenge. Look it up in your leagues on AFL Fantasy Classic. We're going to go through that again. We're going to have a prize on the line this year as well. So make sure you join that. That is an open league. You can search it in your league settings or wherever you join your league. Warnie will be able to tell you how to do that and join along. We'll see you on the podcast. Keep an eye out on Wednesday. There's going to be another episode of the Holmes Files with another special guest coming up. We'll talk to you all soon. Fare thee well until then.